And now back to Farmcast Radio with your host, Brian Ulmer.
My guest once again is Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg.
I'm glad you brought up process because I was really frustrated with the fact 1420, how fast it moved from introduction to third reading in the House. What happens if there's differences between the House and the Senate bill? Do you guys go back to a conference committee before, or how does that work?
That's a great question. So when the process is that a bill is introduced in one chamber, it goes through that process of the chamber, they make changes. We saw that in the police, the law enforcement reform bill as well. And then after one chamber passes it, it goes to the other chamber. It goes through the same process, and they make changes to it. And when they're done making changes to it, you have, as the original chamber, you have a couple of different options. You can agree with the changes that the other house had, the other chamber had, and that's what we call concur. So you concur with their changes, and that's the bill then that goes to the governor's desk. One of the other options doesn't happen on a very often. If you think that your chamber got it right and the other chamber screwed it up, you can adhere to your own chamber's process. And then the most common one is that we go to conference committee. So if you have changes in the Senate and changes in the House, there are members from each of those appointed by the Speaker and the President of the Senate that have formed a committee and work out those differences so that you have something that's mutual agreeable among the two chambers. That's normally the way it works. I don't know if that's what will happen with 1420. I don't know if the House will take the Senate amendments and say, you know what, those are good amendments in addition to what we did. We'll live with those and concur. We'll see what happens when it's all said and done.
And in the particular case of 1420, a couple of weeks ago, Governor Polis, at his press conferences on COVID, has said that he wouldn't support 1420. But just last week, in his latest press conference, he was asked that question, and he said that he hadn't talked to the Dems in quite some time in regards to 1420, but that his door was open for negotiations. So does that leave a foot in the door that he's probably going to sign it or veto it? I hope you'll keep us updated on that one. I want to move on. You mentioned the law enforcement reform. I think that was 2217. But what's your thoughts on that? Because I know you were the only lone dissenting vote on that.
Yeah, when it first passed the Senate, it passed with me as the only no vote. I am still struggling with it, and I'm still happy with my no vote. It creates some scenarios for law enforcement I think are unacceptable. With that said, I think all of law enforcement agrees that, you know, we do need to do some reform, and chokeholds probably shouldn't be used. There are a number of things that need to be, and they actually want, body cameras. Most law enforcement absolutely want body cameras. It's just unfortunate that they're so expensive, and I don't know how small community police departments, for example, Hugo, which may have three or four officers for that town, Haxton, Julesburg, Holyoke, you know, small communities that actually have a small number and a very small budget, I don't know how they comply with these regulations, and my fear is these small communities will say, look, we can't meet these requirements, so we're just not going to have a police force in these communities, and then you're going to have to rely on the county sheriff's office, who is also strapped for funds but has more people most likely in most of these counties, but now they're going to have to cover these small communities as well, and that becomes a snowballing effect on how do they meet those needs in the small communities, rural communities that don't have the money of a Denver Police Department or a Lone Tree or something like that that also doesn't have the tax base to be able to fund police departments to meet these standards. One of the things that was most challenging was the governor left all the state patrol or left state patrol and the Colorado Bureau of Investigation out of this because the governor knew that this was too expensive for the state. But yet they were going to do this unfunded mandate on our local communities. That was a problem for me. They did since then put the state patrol back in on the requirements for the body cam. But then there is a liability issue that was part of the bill that is also challenging for me. A section of the bill says if a policeman makes a mistake and the police department gets sued, that policeman has to pay out of his checking account. He can't even buy insurance to cover him. You know, if you and I are driving along and make a mistake or someone makes a mistake and hits us, the idea of having insurance to cover that is what we use to mitigate that risk. They're not letting policemen do that, and it's the only industry that I can think of in the world now that we're not going to allow to indemnify themselves, to protect themselves with insurance. That doesn't make sense to me at all, quite frankly, and if we can have insurance companies that protect and cover drunk drivers that do more damage on a regular basis, and those people are covered, why would we not allow policemen to be covered, and why do we make them and their families? And it's just not them. Understand, it's their wife and kids that are going to be paying for this as well when it comes out of their checking account. That's unacceptable to me, and I think that is an unreasonable expectation, and that's why I voted no on this bill. I think there's a number of good aspects for police reform in the bill. I think we are making progress. The problem is that you try to do a bill with no stakeholder conversations before you introduce the bill and you ram it through in a couple of weeks, that's not the way to do good legislation. But that's the way this legislation was done, and that becomes frustrating.
Seems like a very huge bill that was a knee-jerk reaction to a situation that's happened nationwide, not necessarily right here in Colorado. Just have to see how that all shakes out. And you guys had the situation down at the state capitol with protests, started peaceful, turned into rioting and looting. It just doesn't make any sense. And then vandalizing capitol, taxpayer-funded buildings. It's a head-scratcher.
You're exactly right. And I'm one of those that believe in peaceful protests. That's in our Constitution. We should be able to peacefully protest. The key word is peacefully. Peaceably, I believe, is what it says in the Constitution. When you do damage to other property, that's no longer peaceable. That's, you're breaking the law. What's frustrating is police departments have decided to allow the looting, the damage, the breaking the glass, the destroying property, all across the country, the pulling down statues, damage to private businesses, setting fires. You can call it what you want. Some people call it protesting. I call that breaking the law and doing damage to someone else's property. We don't tolerate that. We don't allow that. And the police should prosecute those folks. But what we saw was our elected officials walking arm in arm with those people. And so and it's hard to differentiate between the people that are doing the peaceful protests and people that are doing the damage. So the peaceful protests are giving cover to those that are doing the damage. And from my perspective, that's wrong. It's wrong to destroy someone else's property. I got hung up in a couple of the protests. It's challenging times for us when you have social distancing that's ordered by some by the leaders of the state, but yet those same leaders are walking out arm in arm with those that are not following those rules. And so I don't know how you justify it. It makes the whole thing, quite frankly, a joke. With the social distancing, everything else going on, tied with the destruction of property, it's challenging times for me, and I'm frustrated.
And public property, too. The heartbreaking part was seeing the graffiti at the Capitol, and then seeing legislators go out and take time to clean it, which, you know, hats off to them for doing it. But if that would have been our parents, for instance, Senator Sonneberg, we'd have been grabbed by the ear, had a toothbrush and the thing of Clorox, and we'd have been sitting there until we cleaned our own. There's Capitol cameras around there that saw who did this. But with the masks, I'm sure it's hard to identify them right away. But I'd have made them clean it up. But I guess we were both from a different time.
I need to correct you. We wouldn't have been sitting there because our butts would have been so red from what we had taken beforehand. We just stood and bent over and cleaned that with a toothbrush. You're exactly right.
We'll be back right after these messages. To find out more about FarmCast Radio and catch up on the latest news in agriculture, visit barnmedia.net.
In a world where people are more skeptical than ever about their news, isn't it nice to know that you can still trust your local farm broadcaster? In a recent study, farm radio was rated almost twice as reliable as major news outlets. Brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Ag Fact of the Day. Colorado farmers and ranchers contribute $41 billion to our state's economy and employ nearly 173,000 people. This Ag Fact is courtesy of the Colorado Corn Farmers Checkoff Dollars and the Colorado Corn Administrative Committee.